Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people.
Okay, here we go. The Media Project is back on the air for another week. Welcome, I'm Ira Fussfeld, the former publisher of the Daily Freeman of Kingston, New York. And I'm joined by Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. Good day, Alan.
Hello, hello.
And Judy Patrick is here. She's now with the New York Press Association, formerly the editor of the Schenectady Gazette. Judy?
Woo-hoo. Glad to be here.
Woo-hoo. And Kaylin Brown is back, heads up the journalism program at the College of St. Rose here in Albany, New York. Good day, Kaylin.
Hello. And our Department of Communications.
Ah, okay. See, I knew I was going to get it wrong, and David DeSena didn't give me notes, and so I'm going to blame it on
worry.
Him. But he's
Don't.
Used to I didn't say I was worried.
No. She's very sensitive about these things. You know, titles mean a great deal. Not to me at all.
Well, the college might care, so.
Well, we actually have a letter regarding something that Kaylin mentioned. So let's start the program with this. On last week's Media Project, Kaylin Brown mentioned a new model to save local news. I grew up in New York, and I seem to remember that there were different versions of the New York Times, Westchester, Connecticut, etc. There was the standard paper with separate section by region. How about this idea for saving local news? In our area, for example, the Times Union could be the mother paper with a Troy, Saratoga, Schenectady, Amsterdam, etc. section added. People will buy/subscribe to the version they wanted. The TU absorbs the local reporting parts of the Gazette, records, etc. We still have local robust reporting and news people, but the model allows for a scale on the operational expenses to produce the paper/news. This is an app from an avid fan, Loretta. There's so much that I can answer about that, but I'm going to let you folks do it.
Yeah, let's hear from Judy first, because Judy was the editor of the rival paper, the Schenectady paper, the Independent Schenectady Gazette, Independent Gazette, and she might have something to say about that.
Well, you know, this is editioning, which is what newspapers did for many years. We at the Gazette editioned. We had a Saratoga Springs edition, Fulton Montgomery Schoharie edition, and a Schenectady edition. So the front pages were all local news, and the regional fronts were local news. Times Union did the same thing in terms of editioning, but it requires actually a lot of manpower. I think what the writer is suggesting, though, is that the local newspapers consolidate their efforts and differentiate how the stories are played. You know, the editioning worked well for the print product because the play mattered. But again, you needed a lot of people. It still doesn't resolve the problem of you got to have real people on those beats to produce the content.
There's also something called capitalism, you know what I mean? And the Times Union, of course, is a big kahuna around here. But I don't know that it serves the public well to have one paper handling everything. I'm a big fan of multiple ideas. You know, there are public radio stations all over the place. I think we're the best, but I think we have to work to be the best because they're out there.
Well, I think Judy hit it on the head that we all did regional editions, and the reason that we did them was largely just as this writer suggested, gives you an opportunity to narrow down on one specific area. In our case in Kingston, we used to have three separate editions, and we would move stories around and some from edition to edition, or eliminate one story in one edition and not in another edition. But we found two things. One, it's very labor intensive. It's expensive because you've got to start the presses up and down, and that creates more waste of newsprint. And the other thing is significantly that we found is that, for example, we split Ulster County in half, and we had a Southern Ulster edition and the Main Ulster edition. And stories that appeared in the Southern Ulster edition might not have appeared in the larger edition, and readers wanted that coverage. They didn't want less coverage. We would substitute stories that were in the Southern edition with what we thought were more pertinent stories. But the readers wanted all of the coverage, as readers always. Which do you want, this or this? We want both. But it's a financial issue, and to the writer, Loretta, good idea, but we've tried it, and it's yesterday.
But what if, Ira, the Times Union decided that they wanted to be preeminent right up and down the Hudson Valley or in the Albany region or, Judy, in the Schenectady region, and you should all just join them and let them run everything? It sounds like a lousy idea to me.
We don't want monopolies, but I do think that there are a way for collaborations to benefit the public. And so the more that media organizations work together to find solutions to getting the most information to the most people, that seems viable. I do remember at the Troy Record that we had beats and editions as well. And reporters were assigned to specific communities. And the beauty of that was that the coverage was more complete for each of those communities. You know, when you have a reporter going every day to Colony Town Hall, a suburb of Albany, and meeting the police department, the planning board, the zoning board, the clerk's office, and going to all of those places and attending the meetings, all the public meetings on behalf of the public, you get more thorough coverage. So Loretta is right about that, I believe.
Well, Professor Brown, what I don't understand about that is your willingness to say, okay, in the interest of the readers, we should let one kahuna run it all.
I didn't say we should let one kahuna
run
it all, Alan Shartok.
Yeah. Sounded that way.
You know, but Alan, I think you have a good, maybe an interesting point. Does it do the industry justice for five news organizations to cover the same press conference and write essentially the same story? I mean, maybe that is penny wise and pound foolish. Maybe that's not a good idea.
Well, that's why we have an Associated Press, right?
I was just going to say the Associated Press in New York essentially does that. When there's a story in Schenectady that's a statewide interest, they will either pick it up on their own or Judy will flag them on it. And similarly, other newspapers around the state are doing the same thing. The fact of the matter is, using the example from the letter writer, the Times Union is owned by the Hearst Company. Other newspapers in the state are owned by other people. And the extent that there is going to be collaboration between them, such as suggested here, it's just not going to happen. Now, that said, we're in desperate times in the newspaper industry. Does that mean that there won't be, at some point, one of these news associations, either the one that Judy is involved with or the one that Diane Kennedy heads for the daily newspapers, that there'll be some, like a war council, like in The Godfather, and after they pass around the gold telephone, all of the publishers will sit around and decide, you know, we ought to be more cooperative? I wouldn't have thought that was possible 20 years ago. I think it's more possible, not likely, but more possible today.
Let's just say you were the publisher of the Times Union, and all of a sudden you had the ability to be preeminent over everybody else and to cover the stories for everybody else. Are you going to think in terms of what's good for everybody, or are you going to think it's what's good for you in terms of the money that you're going to be making as a result of this?
If the Times Union was to absorb stories from other newspapers around the state, there would still not be enough room in the Times Union to absorb all of the stories that would be required to make that newspaper a paper that people in local communities would want to read if they're not currently reading it. In other words, they might only take one story from Kingston. That's not enough to satisfy the readers in Kingston to buy the Times Union if they're not already buying it.
And another observation would be that the Associated Press doesn't cover local news the way a local newspaper can. So there might be value in finding a model that allows for City Hall to be covered in Albany by a particular reporter, and that information is shared differently.
Well, Loretta has given us food for thought, as they say in the cliche handbook. So let's switch gears. Last week, you folks were talking about how the New York Times had responded through their communications wing to a criticism by the president. Well, now this week, the CEO of the New York Times, Mark Thompson, has condemned President Trump for his frequent attacks on the news media, calling them, quote, hostile, stupid, but also dangerous. And this is all motivated by the Times running a story about the U.S. increasing the cyber attack on Russia's electric power grid and Trump calling it a virtual act of treason. I mean, them is fighting words, no?
And we should also note the publisher of the New York Times, Mr. Sulzberger, has published a piece in the Wall Street Journal on the same topic, which is an interesting move, not in his own paper, but in a separate newspaper, I think trying to make the point that this is such a crucial issue that it crosses, you know, traditionally competitive lines.
So we will, I'm fairly safe to say, we all presumably agree with Thompson's sentiments, but much like the question that you raised last week, is this the way for the newspaper, the Times, or any newspaper to go about responding to the president, or is not responding just the best way out of it, as has historically been the case?
Well, Ira, this is the way to do it. I mean, you know, all of those people who are cowardly and who sat back in the Hitler times or other Mussolini or other people and said, well, you know, these guys are clowns, they'll go away. They didn't. When the democracy, when the Republican democracy is threatened, when the freedom of the press and the First Amendment is threatened, I think it is time for people not to say, oh, well, I won't answer him because that'll only help him. No, you got to answer him, and you got to answer him hard and fast. To me, this is exactly the right thing to do.
Well, he certainly makes a point that's worth reminding people, even those people who are inclined not to like the newspaper business in general or the New York Times in particular. And that is, it is really becoming a dangerous situation for journalists. I mean, it started pre-Trump, but certainly it's been molded in the Trump era and at the Trump rallies when he points out to the hostile news media, as he would call them, and people turn and look. And, you know, I wouldn't want to be a reporter in that press pen at a Trump rally when a mob may be going after you. And this stuff has just got to stop.
One of the ways to help, I think, is, again, education. We need to, at an early age, let students, young students, understand the value of journalism in the democracy so that if an attack like this ever happens again, if faced with a president characterizing the media as treasonous, that the media has set up a foundation of the public that understands the value of journalism and would respond in kind and would be supportive and defensive of the practice of good, solid journalism.
Well, once again, I have to call you on what I could only call goo-gooism. Because if you educate them in New York City, fine. Albany, fine. South Carolina, I don't think so. I have a feeling that those communities which are dedicated to the Trump call will educate their people differently. They'll say the evil press, or somebody will say the evil press and the slanted press, and they'll accept that. It's a good idea to educate early, but I think that there are some dangers here.
Well, how do you answer this, Table Group Media Project on WAMC Northeast Public Radio? Many Americans say the creation and spread of made-up news and information is causing significant harm to the nation and needs to be stopped. This is according to the Pew Research Center.
Exactly.
But here's what I find interesting about it. People in this survey are blaming political leaders and activists far more than journalists for the creation of made-up news, but they believe it is primarily the responsibility of journalists to fix the problem. In other words, it's not our fault, but they want us to fix it, and they blame us for it, too.
That survey made me smile from ear to ear because I said, great, they do not blame us for the spread of false information. They're getting it. The survey also talked about how people are starting to unfollow people who have given them bad information, that they are not visiting websites that they have found to present a lot of fake news, of bad news. You know, it sounds like the American public is finally getting the message that there is fake news out there and they have to be more careful about it. The idea that the news media is responsible for fixing it, I agree. I'm willing to take on that charge.
Even though we might argue that the news media didn't create the problem, we're in charge with fixing
it. You know, that's what we do day in and day out. We report on problems and we help society deal with it.
As I've always said, an awful lot of people I talk to say that the press got it wrong on them. They had a meeting and they didn't emphasize the right things and all like that. So I don't know how you fix that if, in fact, there is some truth to it, Judy.
Well, there's a school of thought out there, and I don't know whether you, as the CEO of a public radio station, Alan, have heard about this, but people are specifically saying that public media is the one who should be in charge with healing a divided nation. And specifically, there is a report out centering on a public radio person in Salt Lake City, Utah, who believes that it is the job of public media in reporting the news not to report it the way it has historically been reported, but more to get behind the story and explain the story better and help people listen to each other in new ways. Now, I don't know why public media is any more responsible for doing that than any other media, but are you aware of this movement out there, Alan?
I am not. However, I think it's nonsense. I mean, you know, you think for a second about what the role of public radio is. And we are supposed to be reporting truth, and we're supposed to be reporting truth to power. Now, honestly, we have a guy named Donald Trump. I think Donald Trump is a menace to this country. 40% of the people agree with him. Now, what does public media do? Get in there and explain it in such a way that people will accept these differences between people? No. The guy is a positive evil. That's my view.
There are ways, though, I think that public media and the media in general can forward the conversation and deliver the information without being divisive. I think there are ways to differently frame arguments and problems in society without always using a blame narrative. Wendy Wyatt was a scholar who did a pretty exceptional study on the blame narrative, and it's a problem in journalism. Why are we always looking to blame people? Why are we not looking for solutions? And isn't there a way to move more toward what we have in common than continuing to work on divisive issues?
So you make a list of all the things that Donald Trump has done, which have been, in my mind, positively evil. I think public radio has a role. I think all media has a role. And I don't know how you do it unless you call them out on it.
Well, this particular, the aforementioned Utah station and the Utah personality, they've done a 6-part series, and he said, "We took the stance that public media's role is to help communities grapple with what divides them. We aimed for engagement and self-reflection. Each episode included a personal challenge to each listener to try in their own life." And that's the theory behind the assertions.
Well, it's the right thing to say. Anybody could say that, right? But on the other hand, there could be a clear and present danger in this country. I think there is. And I think public radio may want to bring people together. But on the other hand, if you are singing Kumbaya and you don't have the ability to call out some of the evils in the society, I think you failed in your job.
Am I wrong, Alan, in the assertion, and I'm not trying to be critical, that public radio's reputation nationwide is as a liberal organization generally? And if we agree with that premise, even though there are dissenting voices from time to time, would the people who need to be reached by this kind of initiative not be reachable because they're not listening to public media?
So if Hitler was followed by fascists all over the place and the press, which got shut down, of course, was critical of them, would the blame have been on the press or would the blame have been on Hitler?
Well, the issue is not blaming the press. The issue is trying to get the public to sort of talk to each other. I mean, we have so much of the fighting back and forth now is just...
Well, in my opinion, NPR does a lot of that. Sometimes too much. They will go and they will make sure that if they get somebody who is critical of Trump, they get somebody who is positive about him. I've seen it again and again and again, and you are right. Public radio has a reputation as being liberal, and we know that each of the presidents who served on the Republican side, particularly Ronald Reagan, were really terribly critical of public radio. I believe he called it news from Managua. and if you report the news accurately, somebody's going to say that you're prejudiced.
So do you think reporting the news accurately and continuing to deliver deep dive reporting is one antidote to solving the problem that is this administration?
Absolutely not. I don't. I mean, I think what happens is you've got that 40%. They are adamant in what they want. You come out and you do a fine job of deep diving, and you go and you say to people, here's the way it is, and it is that way, by the way. And somebody blames you and says you're not able to bring people together. It's nonsense.
This is The Media Project. I'm Ira Fussfeld. He's Alan Shartok. She's Judy Patrick. She's Kaylin Brown. That makes four of us. We should have a minion almost, but that's a different issue. Hey, you know what the Orlando Sentinel did, the newspaper
yes.
in Orlando, Florida? On the day of the big kickoff of the Trump campaign in Orlando, the Orlando Sentinel ran an editorial which basically said, we know which candidate we're not endorsing, and that's Trump. And it was really a hard-hitting editorial. It said, some readers will wonder how we could possibly eliminate a candidate so far before an election and before knowing the identity of his opponent. Enough of the chaos, the division, the schoolyard insults, the self-aggrandizement, the corruption, and especially the lies. So many lies, from white lies to whoppers, told out of ignorance, laziness, recklessness, expediency, or opportunity. And I think they should really tell us how they feel, no?
I think they did a beautiful job.
But again,
they nailed it.
The politics aside, let's talk from the media. Are they worth second-guessing? Not necessarily because they had this opinion, but it was certainly a provocative editorial, and the timing of which was not a coincidence. What do you think about that?
Yeah, you know, let's not kid ourselves. Political endorsements of newspapers, particularly at the presidential level, mean nothing because nearly every single newspaper in the United States endorsed Hillary Clinton and not Donald Trump for president, and it meant absolutely nothing.
I would take a contrary view, of course, Judy, which is that editorials mean a great deal. They set the moral tone of a community. I don't always agree with them, believe me. But the Berkshire Eagle in Berkshire County, I write a column on Saturdays, that the Berkshire Eagle, they endorse people, and with some regularity, those people win. So it isn't everywhere that people don't listen, but, you know, you're right. There are an awful lot of people who have a different idea than the editorials have.
Well, I thought this particular editorial, and I basically agree with Judy's point of view about the importance of editorial these days, but I think people in Orlando who read this paper might be more inclined to be moved by this editorial than if the New York Times had run that same exact editorial on the same exact day. It is still their local newspaper, a paper that they read every day, and they have a certain level of trust for it, even in these days of newspapers not being trusted. So I thought that the editorial was well-timed and very effective.
I can't help this, and I apologize to all of you in advance, but it was a very good editorial, and it was anything but Mickey Mouse.
No, it was not. Oh, yeah. That's the goofy Alan Shartok who said
ha-ha, goofy. Yeah.
I got it, too. I'll settle up later, Myra.
But what about the idea of them doing it so soon and without even knowing who the opponent is? You never know what's going to happen.
Well, but they know
time.
It's going to be one out of 20, and they've determined, presumably, that any one of those 20 is better than what we have now. And I think many of us would agree with that. Not all, according to the surveys. By the way, we talk all the time here and elsewhere about whether or not it makes sense for newspapers to put up paywalls on their internet sites, and their revenue is down, advertising revenue is down, circulation revenue is down, and that the future has to be digital. And we're finding more and more that that's not happening. Newspapers are not making money to the extent that they thought they would. But a recent study by the Reuters Institute for the Study of Journalism said something that I found particularly interesting and had not thought of, and that it says that even Netflix, Apple, and Amazon are competitors to newspapers for revenue because they are all subscription model organizations, albeit entertainment largely. And like all other subscription models that are out there, it's just yet another bill that people have to pay, and people are unwilling to pay it. They have what I think is called subscription fatigue. So I guess the question is, do you agree that Netflix and Amazon is a competitor now to the daily newspapers of the world?
I don't, and I'll tell you that right now. I think people were used to free newspapers, and they, for a long time, I used to duke this out with Rex on the show. You could go on and you could get it for free. Now, because of the economic vicissitudes, they have to charge. So that's different from Netflix, which was charging from the beginning, right?
It was. I just find the reaction of many in the public disappointing. I think we've talked about this here where we've all seen or perhaps participated in ourselves interactions with readers who are complaining about the payroll. How come we have the payroll's annoying? I'm not going to pay for it. And then when you respond, as many editors do, and say the paywall is paying for the journalism, people say, screw you, I'm not going to pay. And if they believe it, they're entitled to it.
But don't you think, Ira, for a second, that we could come up with a better solution? For example, every morning I have to look at all kinds of newspapers. I cannot afford to have a subscription to every single newspaper in America, right? So therefore, wouldn't it be great if we could put some money into a pot which would distribute it to the various newspapers based on your usage and allow you to do that? I think that that might be one solution.
The public needs to understand, or I would suggest that the public needs to understand, the value of news, and that it matters that we are paying attention to what is going on around us. I object, and I will continue to object, to the use of the term paywall. I don't believe that is an actual construct. I believe that you pay for subscriptions. You pay for services. That is how we operate in a capitalist society. And we should be paying for our news because it's valuable and it helps us to make decisions about how to lead our lives. I think that more education about the value of news would also help the public understand that if they want to proceed as informed individuals rather than as ignoramuses, then they should read the news.
Yes. But what about what I said?
What you said, Alan, is going to kill the small local newspaper. If you have one big aggregation site,
yeah,
where the big guys always eat up the local news. They, you know, we talk about stealing content. Whenever there's a good local story, you'll see the, you know, the bigger papers pick it up and they will gather all the traffic. And in that way, the small papers are at an incredible disadvantage.
So hey, Jude, what yeah? should happen? Should every single newspaper have a single paywall? People like me who have to read, you know, 20, 25, 30 newspapers in a morning, am I supposed to subscribe to every single one of them?
Would you be willing to pay per article, for example?
I would.
of the things that's considered.
Yeah. I would.
Probably still not be enough money to make newspapers whole. I mean, I think the answer to your question, Alan, is unlike the old days when we did not, you could not walk into the corner news shop and buy the Los Angeles Times, but you could buy six or eight regional newspapers. And if you wanted to read the six or eight regional newspapers, you'd pluck down your two bits or whatever right. it cost at the time and you'd buy them. Well, that's what we're asking people to do now online. But one of the big mistakes that our industry has made, and I and others have been saying this for years, is that when the internet came along, we ran around like chickens without heads and we said, we got to get our content online. And we did, and we didn't charge for it. And if we had charged from it from day one, the people understood this is a new way of delivering the news, they would have gotten used to it. But once you start giving the stuff away, it's very hard to make money on it afterwards.
You could be right, Ira. Could have been, should have been,
you
would
could have been.
Been
right, Ira.
Well, that's,
but if the information exactly. is essential, if the information in the newspaper online is essential and people are talking about it, other individuals recognize I need to know what's going on, and I too should be paying for my information.
You know, but sadly, that Reuters study also indicated that 40% of the circulation revenue to the New York Times was for the crossword and for the cooking.
Well, whatever works. That's women. We've all diversified and added new products to try to figure out a way that somebody will want to buy what we're doing. Well, let's just very quickly talk about what's happening at New York One, the cable news channel in New York and in the surrounding counties. It has been sued for age and gender discrimination, allegations of a systematic effort by managers to force them off the air in favor of younger, less experienced hosts, they meaning five female anchors. And the quote from one of them is, "We feel we are being railroaded out of the place. Men age on TV with a sense of gravitas, and we as women have an expiration date."
Well, they're certainly right about that.
Take that back, Alan. You misspoke.
No. They are certainly right in their accusations that they are making, and their lawsuit, I think, is correct. Why should somebody, because they get a little bit older, a woman who gets a few lines in her face, be forced off the air? It's ridiculous.
Broadcast has different rules than print.
That's going to be it. I'm sorry, the clock has rung on us.
Oh, no.
So we're going to sign off. I want to thank everybody for listening to The Media Project. I'm Ira Fussfeld with Alan Shartuck, Judy Patrick, and Kalen Brown. We'll talk to you again next week on The Media Project.
It must have startled poor old Sadie's on ting-a-ling-a-ling city desk. Hold the press, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ting-a-ling, ting-a-ling, ling-a-ling-a-ling. Now, newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally...